Now, you would surely appreciate a Dhamma talk on understanding the nature of happiness. But unfortunately, this is not going to be the topic. And in order to really gain happiness, first of all, we need to understand what? The opposite, namely suffering. So the topic of our Dhamma talk tonight is understanding physical suffering. And Marcia then will talk about afflictive emotion tomorrow, which then will cover both sides, physical suffering as well as mental suffering. The Buddha in the 45th Samyutta Nikaya has defined suffering, and he says, "Bhikkhus, bhikkhunis, and lay meditators, there are these three kinds of suffering." What three? Number one, suffering due to pain. Number two, suffering due to conditioned formations. And number three, suffering due to change. Now, these are the three kinds of suffering. The Noble Eightfold Path is to be developed for direct knowledge of these three kinds of suffering, for the full understanding of them, for their utter destruction, for their abandoning. Now, the first form of suffering due to pain, the Visuddhimagga explains as follows, and this in Pali is known as dukkha, dukkata, and this is painful bodily and mental feeling. As the second one, suffering due to formations in the Pali scriptural language known as sankhara dukkata. This is all conditioned phenomena of the three planes because they are oppressed by rise and fall. And then as for the third one, suffering due to change, viparinama dukkata in the Pali scriptural language, is pleasant feeling which brings suffering when it comes to an end. Now, the Buddha several occasions engaged in discussions about anicca, impermanence, about unsatisfactoriness, dukkha, as well as the absence of a self, anatta. And so on one occasion he asked, "Well, what do you think? Are material form, feeling, perception, mental formations, and consciousness permanent or impermanent?" Well, the answer to this we've heard already during the preceding Dhamma talk, namely that they are impermanent. If a thing, if an object, a phenomenon is impermanent, is it then pleasurable or painful? And the answer given at the time of the Buddha is it is painful. Now, the main reason why formations are unsatisfactory, why they are suffering or painful, is because they are impermanent. So if we hang on, or if we experience some pleasant experience, some desirable experience, then we want to hang on to this experience, and any change of it is then perceived as suffering. Now, the suffering, that nature formations is inherent in the five aggregates, and certainly it is referred to as the characteristic of suffering, dukkha, lakkhana, in the Pali scriptural language. So that characteristic of suffering then is nothing other but the oppression, suppression, the obstruction, and the fearfulness brought about by the continuous origination and dissolution of the aggregates. So, and because formations keep arising, disappearing, keep arising, and passing away, because of this itself is a form of oppression, suppression, etc. Now, let us elaborate on those three forms of suffering as detailed or as explained by the Buddha. Now, when it comes to ordinary formations, physical or especially physical formations, they do not seem to have any connection with suffering upon somewhat superficial observation. However, if we sit in meditation or outside of meditation without changing our posture in any way, then sooner or later the suffering nature will become obvious. So if we sit in one posture without changing the posture for an extended period of time, then sooner or later pains and aches will develop. They'll increase more and more, and then we will want to change the posture. We will want to get away from those unpleasant sensations. Now, we get reminded of the nature of suffering through simple things such as the arising of a headache or a toothache or other unpleasant physical sensations. And these, at first, we may easily just put aside by saying, well, they're rather evanescent, and they're happening because of happening accidentally, and so we then don't take them too seriously. Now, however, when we sit in meditation and we do not change our posture, then then we will gain a different understanding. Now, what are the things that contribute to our suffering due to pain? Well, we have experiences such as a piercing pain, a stabbing pain, a shooting pain, a throbbing pain, a burning pain, stinging pain, a tearing pain, a cutting pain, a pricking pain, a poking pain, and a pounding pain. You have any more to add? I will happily take your advice. Well, these different kinds of pains exist, and probably there are many more, and we can then further divide them by way of their intensity as excruciating pains or unbearable pains, as sharp or acute intense pains, or as a dull or mild pain. Now, obviously, yeah, there are many other unpleasant sensations around apart from just straightforward pains. Now, for the most part, these pains are associated with or come along with some unpleasant feeling. However, later on in our meditation practice, this may change. Now, as for the mental dukkha, this I will leave for Marcia to explain tomorrow. Now, next, we have to explain or to elaborate further on sankhara dukkata. So, suffering due to conditions. It's or we wake up in the morning, and suddenly then we wake. Well, we get up, and suddenly then we go to the bathroom. We wash our face, and suddenly then perhaps suddenly shave, and suddenly then we have to engage in all of these many routine habits, and hardly any one has suddenly ever thought of the troublesome nature of these activities. So, having taken breakfast and suddenly then having brushed one's teeth once, it certainly would be great if we wouldn't have to repeat this procedure again. And so, but unfortunately, comes suddenly lunch, and suddenly with this, our teeth get soiled once again, and suddenly we think of our dentist, and suddenly thus suddenly we feel compelled to go and brush our teeth a second time, and then after the juice in the evening, we will remember our dentist one more time and rush to brush our teeth a third time in a day. And this happens day after day. How cumbersome and how time-consuming this certainly is. Now, the same thing, how nice would it be if we could be more like the devas and eat deva food and not have to then eat again and again and again. Or how nice if we could attend one aerobics class and that would be it for the year and not have to attend it again and again. And so there are all these many activities, regular activities that we have to engage in, and so, and not just once, but many times. And this, and so having to engage in them over and over and over again, well, this is a form of suffering. Maybe to explain one more thing. So, you wake up in the morning, and then you take a shower, and suddenly you consider your body as being clean for the day. And so, then you go about your daily chores, and suddenly, let's say you have to lift some heavy items, suddenly maybe go shopping, and suddenly then carry food items and various juices and whatnot, and so these things are heavy, and suddenly then so you put all of these things in the car, then when you drive back home, and then when you get back home, you have to do it all over again. You have to unload your car and then carry this stuff into the kitchen. By the time you're done, you are sweating. What about that cleansing situation of the body? Is it still going on or no more? Well, it is no more. And then you feel an urge to take yet another shower. So there are many of those satna situations, and satna these arise owing to the impermanence of satna formations. So that satna clean status that you enjoyed in the morning after having taken a shower is just not going to last forever. This is going to undergo changes, and thus it will require taking a shower maybe a second time, and then the next day it's going to be the same thing all over again. So this thing in Pali is known as Sankhara Dukkata. Now, when it comes certain to viparinama dukkha, namely suffering due to change, then this certain covers pleasant experiences which are connected with a pleasant feeling. So we see an enticing visible object and we want to hold on to it, or we hear some sweet voice and again we will want to hold on to it, we will want to experience more of it, hear more of it, or we then smell some fragrant scent and once again the mind wants more of it, or we come across some tasty flavor which also seems rather interesting and worth pursuing. The same thing goes for pleasant bodily impressions and certain interesting mental formations. So with regard to those, either we want to hold on to them or we may want even more of the same. And certain this satna then, if those experiences however change, and let's say an enticing visible object then is no more, then the suffering follows. The same thing goes satna for the other examples. And so the loss of one of these experiences or change then entails suffering. This is what is known as suffering due to change, viparinama dukkha in the Pali scriptural language. So when we look at the whole range of our physical and we can generalize also mental experiences, then in the end they are just a constant mass of suffering. So what's at superficial observation seems like all pleasant experiences, just happiness, formations that conduce to happiness, turns out to lead to just the opposite, namely suffering. So to summarize the three forms of suffering or unsatisfactoriness as explained by the Buddha are suffering in the form of pain, suffering inherent in formations, and suffering in change or due to change. Now, what covers up this aspect of suffering? It is our tendency to change postures all the time in the face of suffering. So it is our habit of changing postures. As soon we sit, let's say, on a couch, rather comfortably, maybe talking to another person, and then as the conversation is lasting longer, let's say 20 minutes, half an hour, sooner or later, sitting on the couch is not that comfortable anymore, and maybe some discomfort develops in the buttock, some hardness, some pain even, and suddenly with this, we feel tempted to change our, or forced to change our posture. And suddenly then, after maybe 5 minutes, another new discomfort arises somewhere else in the body, and maybe in the back, and suddenly then the habituated reaction is to change the posture one more time. And this may happen many times within a sitting, or within a conversation of 1 hour. Or what might happen if we get tired of sitting in one place, then we will do what? We will get up and walk. And suddenly then, after a little bit of walking, we may feel, oh well, this is too strenuous, and let me cut this walk short, and suddenly go back to the house, and suddenly then maybe lie down. And after half an hour of lying, we find, oh, this too is also causing pains in the back, and then we may want to get up one more time. And so, these frequent changes of posture create a situation that makes us believe that we are only experiencing comfort, but and it's we're basically in a cocoon of an illusion, the illusion of comfort. And when we do not give in to these impulses or intentions to change, then the unsatisfactoriness, the pains and aches will become pretty obvious. And so, one of the reasons for the instruction to sit still for an entire hour without changing one's posture, or at least as far as one, as long as one can, maybe 40 minutes, 45 minutes, is for a meditator to discover the suffering that is inherent in various certain postures. Now, in the course of the insight meditation practice, we are bound to come across various experiences of unsatisfactoriness or suffering, physical suffering. Now, during the very first insight knowledge, we within just 3 or 4 days of practice, there is a lot of physical pain that may arise. So physical suffering in the form of physical pains, hardness, stiffness, aches, various pains, and maybe heat in the body or cold, whatever it might be. And this, especially new meditators, may come as a surprise. So meditation may have been idealized and imagined to be an activity of only pleasant experiences, and here we sit and have to face all these unpleasant physical sensations. Now, when we keep observing predominant objects, sooner or later we will then make the distinction, intuitive distinction, between physical and mental formations. And soon after this, and with further practice, we will then also notice how these physical and mental formations are related or connected by way of cause and effect, which then is another form of intuitive insight. Now, if we stay with the practice and don't run away, don't pack and leave the center, then sooner or later we're bound to see in a very direct manner how a particular object arises, and then while we're observing it, it will undergo many different changes. With this, then the characteristic of impermanence, namely anicca lakkhana, will become quite obvious. Now, when carefully trying to observe a predominant object and it keeps changing all the time, then this may actually not be all that nice. We want to have more time to observe the object, and we don't have the time because the object keeps changing all the time, and this then is a form of suffering, of unsatisfactory. And so, with this satna, then the aspect of dukkha comes satna to the foreground. Now, if we manage to accept satna, this dukkha as satna dukkha, then our practice will move ahead, and other forms of understanding will arise. We might come across a number of rather fascinating or intriguing mental formations, and oftentimes meditators tend to get attached to them. Now, when this happens, the suffering nature formations will be, or that understanding will be weakened, at least to some extent. Now, with further practice, a meditator is likely to gain other forms of understanding, which at this point will not be mentioned in detail, and those will remain for you to find out for yourselves. Now, however, the aspect of unsatisfactoriness will reoccur in one's meditation practice in many different forms, and sometimes it may become quite challenging. And when one sees the unsatisfactory aspects of physical and mental formations, then at times one might feel like giving up and running away. However, with patience, one will stay with one's satna meditation and will gradually learn to accept satna, the dukkha aspect of satna formations. And satna, then what might happen is, as the mind becomes more and more balanced, as it becomes mature, and so as it becomes suddenly rather mature and suddenly also very strong, then one might be observing some object and its unsatisfactory quality may be the main feature, and with this then the crossing over takes place. So the while observing the aspect of dukkha, the realization of path and fruition knowledge may take place. This then is termed in the Pali scriptural language as apanihita vimokkha mukha. So one enters, one gains liberation through the door of the desirelessness. One gains satna nibbana, attains satna nibbana by going through the door of desireless liberation. So the contemplation of this aspect of suffering or unsatisfactoriness is very important for a successful meditation practice. And the reason for this is only if you have seen in a very direct manner the true nature of unsatisfactoriness of formations, will the mind be willing to let go of these formations? Will the mind be willing to be less attached to these certain formations? And the grasping will subside more and more. The experience of Nibbana is nothing other than an experience of letting go of attachment to formations. So if we have not seen dukkha thoroughly in a comprehensive manner, the mind will continue be attached to formations. So seeing dukkha is a preparation for the eventual letting go. Now, there are certain benefits to observing the unsatisfactoriness of formations, the suffering nature of formations, especially bodily or physical formations. Namely, for one thing, it helps to dispel the perception, the wrongful perception of formations as being pleasurable. And if we do not go deeply in our meditation practice, and then we will sea formations as being conducive to pleasure or happiness. And this is known as a distortion of perception, sanya vipalasa, in the Pali scriptural language. Now, if that distortion of perception keeps happening again and again, moment by moment, minute by minute, hour by hour, and day after day, then it will have a certain impact on consciousness itself, and it will lead to a distortion of consciousness in the Pali scriptural language known as citta vipalasa. So your original, your first perceptions are distorted, are not quite in accordance with reality, and this then will shape your mind, will shape consciousness in a certain way, in a wrongful way. If this keeps happening and your consciousness is distorted, then this in the end will also lead to a distortion of views, deity vipalasa in the Pali scriptural language, which then means that you might hold a view such as all formations are conducive to pleasure, which is utter nonsense. Now, by again and again observing formations as they truly are, the dukkha aspect will come to the foreground, and we can no longer deny it, and this then will lead to a rectification of our perception, and then with a correction of the perception will come a correction of our consciousness, and based on this, and then wrong based on this, right views can arise. So the contemplation of suffering helps a meditator to abandon the perception, the thought, and the view that the five aggregates are pleasurable. And suddenly instead, one learns to see them as merely a mass of suffering. Now, when it comes to dealing with bodily pains and aches and other sensations, unpleasant sensations, the attitude that with which we observe formations will make a huge difference. Now, a person by, back then, an associate professor named R.L. Gluckley from one of the East Coast, professor at one of the East Coast universities, in his book Sacred Pain, Hurting the Body for the Sake of the Soul, has presented an interesting interesting models of pain. So he speaks in his book of the juridical model, and then of the military model, and then of the athletic model, and then the magical model, and then models of shared pain, and psychotropic and ecstatic models of pain. So what Eric Glickley did in his book is to describe how different religious traditions, religious as well as non-religious traditions, have dealt with pain and used it for religious practice. Now, in the so-called juridical model, pain is seen as a punishment. So the pains that come up in your meditation practice arise for a good reason. You've deserved those pains, and certain suffering is your lot. And it is some supreme agency that is causing you these pains and aches. The supreme agency, you can call it in different names. Or the pains are seen as a punishment owing to, or are being attributed, would be better to say, attributed to some impersonal mechanism such as karma. So owing to your terrible bad deeds in some past existence, this existence around, here come the suffering. Here comes the retribution. And so with this one then deserves to suffer. And pain is seen as a debt or as damages owed. Now, in the military model, most people who suffer pain today, especially chronic pain, regarded as an enemy, or at the very least as an unwelcome guest, conceptualizing pain as an enemy or invader of one's body. And this certain particular, if a meditator follows this particular model, then there will be certain consequences in one's meditation practice. Now, we have yet another model with regard to pain, namely the athletic model. And in this model, asceticism is regarded as a preparatory training for a future life. The word ascesis, or ascesis in Greek, as used by Plato and Aristotle, means training, and it is closely related to virtue, because athletic training requires the manly virtues of discipline, physical control, and endurance. So the idea here is, when a pain arises, we welcome it, and suddenly we think, okay, great, this suddenly will help me to get to become a really heroic yogi. A yogi who is not afraid of any pain whatsoever. It will help me to become or to increase my endurance. Now, when it comes to the magical models around satna pain, then pain is a thought to arise because of certain magic that satna then is being exercised. So maybe some other person wants us satna to suffer, and satna thus satna we experience these certain pains. And certainly sometimes experiencing these certain magical pains is thought to then overcome them, and certainly to then gain a higher state of existence. Now, there's yet a different, another form of looking at satna pain, namely pain seen as shared pain. Now, in one particular religious satna tradition, one undergoes satna pain for the sake of others. And can you think of this tradition?
Christianity,
there you go. In Christianity, Jesus Christ suffering at the cross, in satna taking or facing severe bodily pains in order to alleviate the pain of others. So suffering on behalf of others. And satna, then finally, there is satna, the psychotropic and ecstatic, or the psychotropic and ecstatic models of satna pain. And apparently, what happens is when one goes beyond a certain very high level of pain, then a certain numbing is happening, and that one no longer feels satna, the pain, and even those pains may even induce euphoric states. Now, these different models of pain have been proposed by Ariel Glücklich, and certainly, which one do you think would be most appropriate for us as meditators? The ascetic model, the military model, the magical model, which one do you prefer?
Athletic model.
The athletic model.
Letting pain be pain.
What's that?
Isn't that just a model for letting pain be pain and that's it? I mean, just a natural part of the process? You didn't do a model for that one?
Oh, no, yes, that is certainly going to be the final model. And indeed, when we observe a pain, we do not want to be in a competition with another meditator, and after sitting and discussing with our fellow meditator who sits right next to us how brave we've been and how many minutes we've managed to deal with the pain. And so meditation is not about this at all. And what do you think of the military model? Seeing a pain as your enemy. So the pain arises in the body, and then we go out and go for it, and we try to get it, or we try to attack it, and suddenly try to get rid of it as quickly as possible.
That's for the
That might be, that's actually interesting. Yes, indeed. That approach might be useful for the mental defilements. Now, taking a pain as an enemy usually will not work at all. And what satna will work much better is satna to observe a physical pain or ache with an attitude of patience, of especially acceptance, and satna then determination or perseverance and detachment. And see, the way you deal with a difficult object will make all the difference. So if you welcome or if you accept an unpleasant certain object, and certainly you embrace it, and certainly you then try to you observe it without any mental resistance, then the mind opens up, the mind is in a place where it can actually look at the qualities of the pain, and out of this then some intuitive knowledge can arise. Now, our usual mental habit is one of pushing pains away. And on the other hand, when a pleasant experience comes up, then we want to hold on to it. And so the mind has this terrible habit of pushing away unpleasant experiences and then holding on to and grasping pleasant experiences. And this going between liking and disliking and grasping and pushing away is actually very tiring. So what we need is to observe a pain with acceptance, certain patience, and so on, and also with a non-reactive attitude of mind, and not freaking out because a pain has arisen. There's yet another important aspect that is worth remembering, namely not to identify with the experience. So it's not my pain, but rather just a pain. Yes?
Question, can we use the pain as an object to learn the relationship between mind and between the reaction of the mind and the pain?
Yeah, sure enough, you can do that. No, sure, why not? And indeed, certainly it will help you to see how reactive the mind is or tends to be around certain pains. Now, the Venerable Sadhu Pandita Biwamsa of Burma has recommended three strategies for dealing with pain. The first one being the attack strategy. So you go right into the center of a pain. You don't. You're not afraid of the pain whatsoever, and then you try to know its nature. However, if this approach or this strategy is not or is at first working but later on no longer working, the mind tires, withers, then you might want to change your strategy. And then you may want to adopt the second strategy, which he calls a kind of a guerrilla strategy. A guerrilla is an insurgent strategy. Strategy used by insurgents. So what insurgents do is, since oftentimes they are in the minority against, let's say, some huge government army, then they will, a small group of insurgents will get together and will launch a surprise attack on maybe some police station or some smaller military camp, and especially at a time when people are maybe sleeping, and once they've attacked and overrun the police post or the camp, military camp, and then maybe manage to capture some weapons, then they'll run away and disperse, and then it will be very difficult to get hold of them. And these insurgents, or this certain form of insurgent strategy, can be extremely complicated to deal with for a big regular army. Now, what does this mean with regard to our pain? means, and that we observe it for a while. So do we approach the pain, we deal with it for a while, and then when the mind gets tired of it, then we will pull back a little bit. It doesn't mean that we don't look at the object anymore, but rather from with some further distance, and in a detached manner, we observe the pain. This then will give the mind to regain some strength, and then once the mind, the mental strength is replenished, then we will go into the pain again. So this we may do several times in a row. Now, if the second approach or second strategy also doesn't work, then the mind gets really tired, then we could apply the third strategy, which you might call the strategy of a gentle or a graceful surrender. And then, with this, you simply start ignoring that sudden pain, and you direct your attention to some other predominant object. So you might suddenly then want to observe the rising and falling movement of the abdomen, or some other object that is relatively neutral and that is easy for the mind to observe. And while you're observing this new object, the original pain may gradually lose some of its momentum, some of its intensity, and then eventually it fades away. So, those three strategies at times may be very useful. When we work with a pain, then it's important to be clear about pains that are practice related and pains that may be health related, or actually that may be an indication for a health problem. So if a pain arises during a sitting, and we then label it, observe it, know its nature, and the pain then subsides and does not last into, or does not continue into the next walking session, then this kind of a pain would be a practice-related pain. But if we do a sitting, a pain arises, we observe it, and it continues for the entire sitting, and it then even lasts into the walking session, maybe throughout the entire walking session, and then the next sitting session, then we better be careful, and then it might be a health-related issue. And in a case like this, it would be better not to push too far, and change our posture, sit on a chair rather than on a cushion on the floor. Now, earlier on, we spoke about the attitude, helpful attitudes towards or in observing a pain, and there's still one more aspect in this certain connection, namely to see a pain as a friend. And you might want to see a pain as a friend because it helps you to develop what?
Patience,
yes, for one thing. What else?
Concentration,
yes, is correct. And?
Understanding.
What's that?
Understanding
is correct. Intuitive insight. So, in the end, a pain may bring about many benefits. And towards the end of this talk, I will give you still one more benefit. Now, when dealing with an intense pain, it might be helpful to remember that this pain, in the end, is anicca, namely impermanent. And this pain, even though it may seem pretty compact, pretty solid, pretty permanent, yet sooner or later it is going to break up and disappear. So, in a general way, we can say that physical pains or physical suffering is shares those three characteristics, namely of impermanence, anicca, of dukkha, and then also of anatta. So, pain is just an object, there's no self behind it. Now, sometimes what happens is that for a while we're quite pain-free, it's fun to meditate, and then more concentration develops, and we're happy about this, but as a side effect, more pains arise. And then we think, what is wrong? More concentration is there, and that now we have to deal with more pains. Well, the explanation is, as your mind is getting more concentrated, it then will be able to discern greater details, and it will be able to discern pains that at first with a dull mind are not necessarily as accessible. And so this may come as a certain disappointment, but don't worry about this. The answer to the problem simply lies in more concentration. And so, if you then continue with your meditation practice, and your concentration gradually gets stronger and even stronger, then there comes a point where those sudden pains then get suppressed, and then the practice will be quite free of pains for a while. Now, when dealing with physical suffering, especially physical pains, there's so much we can learn about these. Different pains have different qualities, and we can see how gradually pain is breaking up. We could also see how the sense of self is there, maybe after a while is even breaking up. And we may also see how at first the mind is extremely reactive towards a pain, and later on it becomes rather balanced and non-reactive with regard to a pain. At that point, a pain may be seen as just another sensation. Now, and the Buddha has highlighted a very interesting aspect around dukkha, namely, he says, monks and by extension nuns and lay meditators, I say that dukkha results in bewilderment or search. So, dukkha results in bewilderment or search. When we look at the life story of different meditators, then we find that there is probably, we may find that there is probably quite a number of meditators who found their way to the practice owing owing to dukkha in one's life, owing to considerable amount of suffering. To give you just one such case, namely Deepa Ma from West Bengal, who was married to an engineer, and suddenly then both of them moved to Burma, and suddenly they had two children, and Deepa Ma had to deal with lots of suffering. If I'm not mistaken, one of her children passed away, and then also her husband passed away. She ended up with lots of physical suffering and physical illness. And she was very much interested in undertaking practice. However, her husband, while he was still alive, prevented her from attending a retreat, saying, in accordance with Hindu tradition, this spiritual practice comes later on in life, and so do this when you're more advanced in life. Now, with the passing away of her husband, she was no longer bound to this, and then after recovering from her various illnesses, she then went straight to the Mahasi Meditation Center in Rangoon, Burma. And having experienced a tremendous amount of suffering, worldly suffering, in a very short period of time, she managed to gain the Dhamma. So dukkha may lead to search, and search may then result in realizing the Dhamma. If we deal with dukkha in an unskillful manner, we may end up like Bhattacharya, and who despaired over the death of her husband, and two children, and her brothers, and parents. And she had to face a huge amount of suffering, or she learned, or she experienced a huge amount of suffering, very intense suffering, within a very short period of time, and that temporarily robbed her of her senses. And it was in the presence of the Buddha that she then managed to see through the suffering, and ultimately she gained the Dhamma. Let me conclude today's Satna Dhamma talk by wishing, may you see dukkha not as something bad, but rather as a tremendous opportunity. May it help you to deepen your meditation practice, and may it even be a door to liberation. And this is it for now.